With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Going on now at Guitar Center, the Ernie Ball Great Gear Giveaway, where one lucky winner will win over $50,000 in prizes from Ernie Ball Music Man, SKB, Electro Voice, Dynacord, Pedal Train, Vic Firth, Latin Percussion, Zildjian, Tune Track, Guitar Center, DNA Guitar Gear, DW, Remo, TC Electronic, Blue Microphone, Universal Audio, Ampeg, Orange Amplifiers, JHS Pedals, Korg, Martin Guitars, and Ernie Ball. To enter, find codes inside selected packs of Ernie Ball strings in Guitar Center stores and at guitarcenter.com between now and October 30th. US residents only. Visit ernieball.com/great gear giveaway for full official rules. Ernie Ball presents the Great Gear Giveaway. Going on now, only at Guitar Center. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I'm your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Matt Knight.
Good. Hello.
And Mark Packham.
Bad. Goodbye.
Ah, yes. Welcome back, Mark Packham.
Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's wonderful to have you joining us.
How's it going? I feel like apart from, you know, we're a little bit behind the curtain here, we just talked for about 20 minutes before starting, but I feel like, yeah, I've not spoken to you guys for, I don't know, months.
Really haven't. This is almost the longest time that I've gone without talking to you in
7 years.
Yes.
No, that's not true, because when we first started doing this podcast, there was a bit where you went off on tour for about, I want to say 7 or 8 weeks, and you did not respond to a single text message because
some
you were
of it
in
was tour. Yeah.
Some sort of drug induced haze, lying in a pool of your own juices.
those opium dems, they'll get you.
Exactly that. And look at you now. You're a responsible adult. You're driving the thing. And unbelievable, basically.
Oh, there we go. Well, it's wonderful to have you back on an episode. I'm excited to, to talk about loads of gear this week. It's a bit of we're going to have a little bit of a pedal special this week. It's not an official pedal special, but a lot of the stuff, almost all of the things we want to talk about, are effects related. So, Mark will have to try and keep up. Of course, you're going to be the advocate.
Well, I feel like I'm sort of out of it now, because as I mentioned in previous podcasts, I'm not really using social media. The only time I talk about guitar stuff is with you guys, and I haven't spoken to you for ages. So, apart from the stuff you've sent me in our little group chat, I really need a good old catch up on what's been released.
You do, and all the news and stuff. So, again, a little bit behind the curtain here, dear listener. We do, of course, share a document now that we're podcasting remotely, as we have been since the start of all of that. So we share a document which includes all of the news and bits and talking points that we're going to discuss, and I split them off into everyone, and at the start we have an introduction where I list all the exciting things that each of us have done and encourage the others to add their own stories so that I know what to talk about. And Mark this week has added, in all caps, Mark used a tuner at practice.
We'll get onto that in a minute. We've got other stuff to talk about first, stuff that's much more important. You got a cat this week.
Okay.
And
yeah, okay.
We haven't had a chance to talk about it because you said, I don't want to talk about it because we want to talk about it on the podcast.
I know, dear listener, this is slightly off topic, but I'm gonna take you on a little journey. Think of this, if you've been listening a while, dear listener, as you know. Do you remember when I sat in piss?
Yeah, I was gonna say, is this the new piss on the bus story?
this is the new piss on the bus. So I got a new cat. So you know, I've never had any responsibility in my entire life, but you know, it's locked down. Me and my girlfriend both work from home. We were like, let's get a cat. And I've always, you know, wanted an interest in cats. So we found this like oriental cat rescue center, contacted them, got a cat. It doesn't matter, that part's not important. We got a little cat, tiny little timid 4-year-old oriental long hair cat called Ava. And we've had a four days, and Emma's been very, very into it. So into the idea of getting a cat that she insisted we bought a new washing machine that was quieter for the cat. So
makes sense. I mean, that's what most people think. You know, most people think, should I get them a cat toy or, you know, some like Dreamies or new bed or whatever? No, new washing machine.
New washing machine. So we, because we've given Ava the dining room kitchen as her area sort of thing. Because she's very, very timid, quite mistreated in her younger years. So very timid, hiding under a dresser at the end of our dining area the bulk of the time. So we have the washing machine turning up, and the washing machine's turning up, so I need to get up early. I get up at 7, I come downstairs, I, you know, unplumb the current washing machine and pull it out into the middle of the room. And Emma's fed the cat some quite smelly, fishy food. The room stinks, so I open up the window, and then I leave the kitchen, you know, to go sort myself up for the day. Emma comes down, goes into the kitchen, window's open, cat's not in the kitchen. There's no other route out other than through that little window, and she's an indoor cat very specifically. So we, and you know, obviously freak out. Now I live in a little village, so we're knocking on neighbors' doors and things like that. Like, people are offering to, you know, go out and searching for the cat when they're on their dog walks and stuff. We must have, mostly Emma, knocked on like 20 doors, you know, in either direction. We're looking around. The washing machine people turn up, so I stay back. I help that, you know, they fit the washing machine, whatever. I put the kitchen back together, put the plinth or kickboard for Americans back on the underside of all the kitchen units. So the entire day comes and goes. Me and Emma go out with torches at night. Neither of us really sleep. We've got a little cat cam set up. I set up like loads of treats outside at the gate. You know, I messaged you guys, messaged all my friends being like, this is awful. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And then this morning,
can I just say, totally believable as well, that the fact that you would get a cat and lose it in 4 days.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
You know, when you're texting us, you often send things through where you're like, oh, this has happened, and it's like, oh yeah, I've done, you know, some sort of like wild drug that I've never heard the name of, and you know, I've left my base it somewhere, and then we all go, oh, it's terrible, and you're like, nah, just kidding, I'm actually home or whatever. This is actually totally believable. And I was like, oh yeah, this definitely has happened.
Yeah it absolutely did. So, you know, we wake up in the morning, I check the cat cam footage, nothing's happened. Actually, a seagull's eaten some of the food that we left outside. But, you know, that was a good video. But, you know, no cat. The cat's not back. And we're like, great. I mean, I've reported it to all the vets by this point and things like that. So we come downstairs, and Emma, for some reason, she can't explain. She was like, I'm just going to take the plinth off of the bottom of the kitchen units. And sure enough, locked underneath the kitchen by me was the cat.
So, hang on.
So,
where was the cat before they came? Had you taken your old washing machine out?
So, I took it out and the cat crawled in the space and went behind the kitchen units. Emma then, of course, you know, that's not normally a space you can access. And Emma saw the open window. You'd think the cat's gone out the window.
Yeah.
And then the washing machine men come in, fit the new washing machine. That freaks the cat out, obviously, who stays under there, sort of, you know, sandwiched into a corner. They push that back in. I turn up and I put the plinth back on, which locks out any escape for the cat. So, and the thing is, that day I used the washing machine and the oven, which are both either side of where the poor little
Joe
cat
Brandon
must have been.
Yeah, so, just When we got, before we got P, we looked after another cat, a great cat. But we also changed a piece of furniture soon after it moved in with us, which it then decided to piss on instantly. So never ever replace furniture once you've got a cat. That's it. Once you've got a cat, that's it.
Just let them settle down first.
Right.
No, just that they will own your house now, Joe. That's it. Yeah. You cannot do anything to your house.
I just feel like I'm so glad that you've managed to, firstly that, you know, nothing untoward happened by just simply locking it in there, but also pushing in a heavy washing machine into the space that it was in, which then pushed it up against the oven.
Well, yeah, it would have been, there's a sink unit in between. So it had, you know, it had 500, 600 mil of room either side of it. But nonetheless, yeah, it was, that must have been an awful, awful experience for the cat.
It is safe now.
I'm happy that everything turned out all right. Well,
you will realise now, because obviously we also have an indoor cat, that you can no longer open your windows.
Yeah.
So prepare to boil in summertime and buy lots of fans for your cat. We bought a fan for our cat. Never use it for us. Just constantly point it at the cat.
Does he actually use it? Because like we bought some cooling mats for ours when it was like really hot, and they're this kind of weird sort of like gel mat that you put on the ground that's weirdly, it's activated by pressure. So when like one lies down on it, the mat gets cooler. And when I put them down, I was like, oh, these two are, you know, they're like really fluffy, long-haired cats. If you know, if you've ever seen my Instagram, that's basically all that's on there. And I was like, they must be boiling. You know, they're like lying down and like, not like panting, but like you can tell they're hot. So I bought these things and I was like, put them on there. Of course, they just step off it instantly and then just proceed to ignore it. So I've got these two cooling mats that are just knocking around. And occasionally I'll just find myself using them. I'll just put them on the desk and I'll just sort of lean on it a bit.
Sit on them more?
No. Just like put it on the desk, sort of lean on it. I was like, oh, that's really nice. Oh,
there you go.
That's good. But yeah, the cats never use them. Basically anything that you buy them, Joe, they won't use.
Yes. I've worked that one out after, you know, spending loads on, you know, nice like wooden toys and, you know, elaborate bedding.
P's favourite toy at the moment is a piece of cable.
Mm. Well, I can sort of up
literally,
that.
That's it.
We've got loads of toys in the house, and our boy cat that is just really lazy and fat, he never plays with any of them. Today, he's been playing with an olive for most of the day that he found on the ground. That's what he's been doing. Knocking it around, jumping on it, sort of nibbling a bit of it, boshing it about a bit. That's been his day, just knocking around with an olive.
It's the dream.
Oh, that is certainly the dream. Anyway, we should stop from being, you know, cat nerds and move back into the Guitar Nerds podcast. Now, dear listener, you're aware that I can both be pissed on a bus and sandwich a cat in between a washing machine and cooker. We need to talk about some guitar stuff. Matt Knight, you messaged us a very lovely, unusual photograph of an effects pedal this week.
Yes. So that's what I love about Instagram. Every so often, it just, you know, it throws you a little gem in the world of guitars. And I found a company called Believable Audio. I think they were probably called 29 pedals, but have changed the name to Believable Audio because I actually saw the picture of the 29 pedals, and I'm guessing it's pronounced UNA, E-U-N-A, which stands for Elite Unity Amplifier. This is basically one crazy-looking make gooder. Nice big rectangle box with four jacks and three sliders. It's basically a mega buffer for your pedal board.
What?
Yes. So it's basically an input driver that replaces a conventional buffer. It's built to protect and condition your instrument signal to prepare it for whatever you want to do with it. Console grade build, three great sounding filters and an alt path insert loop for your classic fuzz or wah circuits, which is quite cool. So obviously you put it at the beginning of your pedal chain, and then if you've got an old fuzz that is input impedance sort of like sensitive, you can run that in the little effects loop. And then when you turn the UNA on, it will actually disengage the buffer that's in that and turn your fuzz pedal on. So you can still have all your vintage stuff.
That is wonderful.
But yeah, it's basically a... it's a really high-end, like console-grade buffer for your pedal board.
I can totally get on board with this. A bit like, I guess, when Petty John did the what was their high-end buffer, the Lift?
Yes, yeah. So this is they basically say it has three sweetening circuits: harmonics, bright, and low. So low adds a little bit of low end, not too much, just for some sweet oomph. Or to make up for low-end loss. Bright adds some brightness. Harmonics pushes the air band where the guitar harmonies are. Harmonics add sweet tube-like chime to any rig. I've listened to some demos. There's only one video on YouTube. No doubt, I think this thing is going to take off. I can already feel it in the air that a bunch of people are going to start picking these up. I mean, that's the best thing you could ever get.
I love the power input.
Yeah, I was just reading that. It's amazing. it just says whatever.
Yeah, where the 9-volt goes in.
Anywhere between 7.5 and 35 volts of either AC or DC.
Which is
why it says whatever underneath.
That's so good. So I guess you get variable headroom depending on
some sort of internal kind of step up or step down.
I could get behind that.
Maybe it's just whatever you've got works and it doesn't make any difference. But
do they handwrite the 29? Because it looks handwritten, but it might just be that's how it's meant to look.
Maybe. I don't know. I think just reading a little bit more about it, what's also cool is they say it's very DIY friendly. So the op amp is socketed, so you can easily audition op amp chips. Notes on the PCB will help experienced DIYers tailor Una completely to their rig. So I think that's quite cool as well. You know, it's a tweaker's delight, as they put it.
This is great. What a wonderful product. This is such a nerdy product.
I know.
I can totally get behind it. Was there a price anywhere, Matt?
$269. Right. Which, okay. I'm into that.
About £200, I guess.
I'm into that. And then they have another pedal that says coming soon called the O-Amp, the output driver. Same great headroom as the Una with 30 dBs of clean gain. Yes.
I could get on board with this. They look fantastic. They're super boutique-y. You know, a slightly boutique-y price for a buffer, but this is exactly what you like. If you really care about your tone, especially your clean tone, then I think this is a fantastic addition for people with potentially bigger boards.
Oh, and nice. The reason why 29, there's a little ranch out past 29 Palms we call the Soft Shoulder. It's not fancy, it's very hot, but it's ours and it's beautiful. And then there's a picture and it's literally in the middle of the desert, and I've been there and it does perfectly. It's one of those places that you'd imagine perfect for building gear because there's just nothing else around there.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Oh, amazing, what a dream. Wow, I think I need to get one. Give it, you know, check it out, dear listener. You can, it's 29 pedals on Instagram, so yeah, check them out and see what they have to offer. Mark Packham,
hello.
You showed me earlier this week a Druman Guitars guitar that was up for sale on the internet.
I did indeed. So Druman are like a British builder, right? From what?
Yeah, that's right. We met them at I think Birmingham.
Yeah, and they make guitars primarily with aluminium necks. I don't know if they do anything with just wooden necks. You might want to confirm that, Joe. But the one that I bought up was the Druman Guitars DJ all aluminium, which is.
I have a feeling. This is without checking, that Druman were the brand that started off doing just aluminium bodies, and actually the necks is a later addition.
Fine. Yeah. So this is basically a kind of offset style guitar. One humbucker, one P90. Humbucker in the bridge, P90 in the neck. Aluminium neck with the split headstock on there, but crucially, the colour is purple fade anodized. Oh, it's God. Basically like one of those cars that I used to build in, like, what's it called?
Need for Speed.
Gran Turismo.
That's got the, you know, the kind of what Gibson called the flip-flop finish, where you kind of, it looks like you sort of turn it a bit and it gives you a slightly different colour. It's very difficult to tell if it actually has that kind of movement to it color-wise, but
I think it might just be a dip.
Yeah, you know, maybe.
Like, so it's kind of, I think some of the angles that it's been taken at make it look as if it is a sort of yeah, the, you know, shifting colour.
But it is very much that. It's that kind of like, sort of like, I don't know, magenta into purple, something like that. And yeah, it's just a cracking looking guitar. And you know, I've not seen that much from Druman. I know that they definitely were at a show that we were at, but I didn't get a chance to play one. I thought I'd just highlight this because if you're into cool looking guitars, and particularly if you're into kind of aluminium necks and that very much that modern take on a vintage style, this is definitely one to check out. Yeah, it's aluminium body, aluminium Druman neck, brass like nut.
A bead blasted, anodized, textured finish. So you know that sort of that rougher aluminium finish on the body, whereas it will be very chromed on the neck.
Yeah, yeah. This this looks great, and I think again, where did we see this? Was this on Insta? I can't remember, but yeah, check them out. Druman Guitars. I'm sure they've got a picture of it up on their Instagram. It looks mega. Some of the stuff they do is wicked. I'm just having a quick look at the gallery on their site now, and. Yeah, I'm into it. I also really, really like their headstocks, like the logo itself.
Didn't they just nail the headstock? The logo especially, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not such a big fan of like the split headstock. That's not for me. I've never really liked that. But just the way that they've done the headstock shape and the way they've done their logo is fantastic. Really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, really cool, really interesting brand. I did talk to them at Birmingham because I was hoping they had some basses in the works, you know, so I could get an aluminium bass neck for one of my basses. But they were just guitars at the time, so I'm still on the hunt for that. That's something I need to make a reality.
And it looks like they still do a mix of different things. You know, there's some here with wooden necks and stuff on their Instagram. So
yeah.
I think you can basically get whatever you want. A nice, you know, mix of the more traditional constructions and the aluminium stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, last week we were talking a bit, Matt, about the tri-parallel mixer, the Electro-Harmonix blendable three-channel pedal, because of course you bought one and you made yourself a little pedal board. Using one, and it got me kind of thinking, because we talked a lot about blends, and I was like, yeah, I guess I'm really fussy about drive, especially on bass, but in general, but very fussy about drive on bass, and I always limit myself to, I have to find drives that have a blend. And so I was thinking about the tri-parallel mixer, and honestly, I didn't really want to buy it. Like, I really like using the MS3. I didn't want to sacrifice the stuff from the MS3 for the tri-parallel mixer. So I was like, okay, maybe I just need a blend control, because then it opens me up to all the fantastic sounding drives, and I can have my fundamentals dealt with, you know, via my clean blend. And so I was looking around, and then I realized you can do it with the Boss LS2. And dear listener, this might well be something you are fully aware of, but I absolutely was not. Because the Boss LS2, their line selector, has one of the settings you can just have both of the effects returns running. So if the idea is if you're, you know, you're line selecting two separate pedal boards or two separate pedals, you can have them both on at once, and then you have an individual volume control for path A and path B. But of course, if you feed with a patch cable, if you feed path B just back into itself, you create a clean blend, meaning you can use any drive pedal and then use the LS2 with a linked patch cable, and you've made any drive pedal you want blendable. And I did not know that. And is that something everyone's fully aware of?
Well, I guess like many things, Boss kind of did it first, and then someone just did it fancier, and then it was like, oh, wait, we sort of already did that.
The LS2, always for me, the LS2 has been a mystery. I've never known how to get the best out of it.
Yeah, and I must admit, I was the same for quite a while, and the reason I'd got an LS2 more recently, before the tri-parallel mixer, was the fact that you've got those two level controls on there. So using something like a Deluxe Memory Man, which if you run it too hot, the repeats kind of distort. I wanted to keep it cleaner. The volume controls are post-pedal, post-loop rather than pre. So it doesn't run any extra gain or volume into the pedal. It simply just makes the pedal louder. Like you do, if you run both at once, but you're just running a cable from one to the other, you've effectively got a clean signal path.
Yeah.
But it's really great for things like chorus and phaser at the same time, or like delay and chorus, you know, creating like a really big sound, or just changing between two instruments, just and then being able to match the volume if you're going between humbucker and single coil, for example.
Of course,
you can go ins to one out. You know, you can also run it as an AB pedal or run two outputs, and then you can match the volume of the two outputs from the LS2 if you want. It's a really good,
surprisingly versatile pedal. I was really chuffed to kind of find that use for it. But of course, it's left me in this position where I'm like, well, I can get any drive I want now. So I was hoping to get some suggestions from you guys, like what drive should I get? I like transparent, sort of, you know, valvey amp sounding, you know, super transparent-y, low gain drives. What should I go for? What should I be looking at?
For bass?
Yeah. But I'll also take guitar suggestions. See, I was thinking about like Frederick Effects do the Scrambled Brains, which is their version of the original, not the reissue, the original Ampeg Scrambler.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Now that does have a blend, so I wouldn't need something for that. But then I was like, I could have any drive. I now no longer need a bass drive. You see, I can just have a guitar drive and blend in that clean signal. So it's more about a great sounding transparent overdrive pedal. So I just thought, you know, I'd take a couple of suggestions whilst I'm on my hunt. You both on the spot.
I tell you one that I've been really, I guess it's, I don't think they've really classed it as transparent, but one thing that loads of people have been raving about is the Earthquaker Devices Plumes, which is their take on a Tube Screamer, but seems to kind of all sort of levels of gain. Loads of people have just been, I mean, they've, it's also probably their most affordable. I think it's $99.
It is, yeah. That's incredibly affordable for Earthquaker.
Tube-like overdrive circuit featuring three different clipping voices, loads of headroom, and almost three-dimensional clarity that will push your amp over the edge. So, yeah, I would say something like that would be quite good. But, Joe, we were discussing this week. I'd finally got round after being on holiday and having too much to do. I finally managed to get the Echo Line pedals plugged in, and obviously you were raving about the Roadrunner, which is obviously a Gear of the Year winner previously, which does everything from light gain to, you know, sort of more high gain stuff. But I was absolutely blown away with the fuzz, the silicon high gain fuzz. It's instant kind of vintage Gilmore, and yeah, it's just absolutely cracking. So I would say, you know, just revisiting Echo Line, the Roadrunner might be, the Plumes might be Echo Line Roadrunner.
Did you prefer the Roadrunner or the Everest?
We did have an Everest when we did it in Gear of the Year before, and I still preferred the Roadrunner because of the lighter gain side of things. So I guess that was, I think it was there. So you can have asymmetrical, symmetrical, or no clipping diodes. And I think it was the one that was no clipping diodes. It was a little bit louder, had a little bit more headroom. Where the Everest was just a great drive pedal, the Roadrunner felt a little bit more versatile.
Yeah.
But one thing I was just looking at here on the Plumes, they've given you some audio examples, one of which is Blues Lawyer. So I'm pretty sure at... with a setting like that, you would know that I'm sure it's going to do the kind of thing you're after. But yeah, they actually say Mode 3 is an asymmetrical silicon diode arrangement similar to the stock Tube Screamer. The tone some people describe as transparent. It's almost like your clean tone is blended in with a slightly less clean tone. So that might be a good shout. And it's very, very affordable as well.
Yeah. Yeah, £99 for an Earthquaker Devices. That is... that's exceptional. Of course, I think the Echo Line stuff is also incredibly affordable. Whilst it's not quite hitting the £99 mark, you're looking at something like a 129
splits. Yeah, 129 for basically everything they do.
And I think I saw that they're running some sort of 10% off at the moment as well. I'm not entirely sure.
I can't see any evidence of that. But yeah, everything they do apart from the line booster, the signal driver even, which is 119, everything's 129.
Yeah.
And in much better boxes. I'm just having a look now on their website, actually, at a size comparison between the old school silicon they did and the one in the smaller box now. And they're so much better than they were.
Oh, you prefer the smaller boxes, do you? I'm a sucker for a weird chassis, but I do understand the practicality of
just,
the new one.
You know, it's double the size, basically, the original one. And, the new one is just so much more usable.
That's the only reason I love Frederick FX is because they do their wedge of cheese chassis for some of their pedals. They've updated their utility percolator, which is their version of the harmonic percolator. And even though we have one of the harmonic percolators, and I'm not sure too much has changed between the two models, because the new one is in the wedge of cheese shape, I think I need to get it.
Yeah, it looks like they've basically... Have they redone all of their pedals in the
I don't think all of them.
It seems like a lot of them are now in this, the wedge of cheese shape.
It's a wonderful sort of marketing strategy. It certainly, separates you from the rest of the crowd. I love that shape.
It's just four of them, actually, out of their entire range. I was getting too excited, but yeah.
Utility percolator
is one of those.
Yeah, it's very cool. I blame Boss for kind of making everything,
standardizing.
Usable.
Exactly. What I want is, imagine if the effects world had just, become all tone benders, if that was the standard.
I would have liked it if they'd all become, what was that effect called? The Bag, which was like an early...
Morley.
The what, sorry?
It was from Morley, wasn't it? I think it was called The Bag.
Wasn't it like an early, what's it called? Not like a vocoder. What's the one where you put the pipe in the mouth?
Talkbox.
Talkbox. Wasn't it like an early talkbox?
Yeah, I've got a really good book,
I've got an idea of it being... the bag being like some bagpipes just on the floor.
No, Joe, it's even weirder than that. I'm trying to find any information about it now.
Oh, damn.
It's so hot because it's just called The Bag. So if you Google The Bag guitar effect, it's like, it comes up with just like, here's a bag for your pedal board.
Yeah.
So it was made by... Hang on, I'm just looking... Hang on, I'm trying to get
man
some info
Googles
now. This
on
is
a podcast.
Man Googling. It was made by Custom, I think.
Custom with a K.
Yeah. No. Okay, fine. So, basically, it's a bag, and the effect happens in the bag, and I can't remember why it happens.
When you say a bag, what do you mean, like a shopping bag? Oh my goodness, I found it.
Yeah, it's like a sort of pouch.
It's a pouch with hair on the side.
Yeah.
It looks so good. Oh my goodness, why isn't everything this way? It just has like a Gibson style pickup selector switch, and then it's like a sort of 60s sort of psychedelic design with fur around the sides. It's absolutely wonderful.
But
I love
you like wear it. It's got
product.
Like a strap on it, and you just like wear the bag. Hang on. Okay, the bag hung over the player's shoulders, dressed in mod fabrics with funky fringed edges that kept it looking cool, not like a mere man purse. The player spoke into the plastic pipe that connected to the plastic tube running to a 30-watt driver housed in the sack. So yeah, basically it's a talk box, but instead of the speaker being on the floor, the speaker's in this bag that you wear around your person. I do recommend everyone go and look it up. It's very odd.
Yeah, very, very, very unusual. I'm kind of into it. I don't think I'm into them describing it as a man purse.
I think I've dug out my old book, which I don't think is available anymore, Analog Man's Guide to Vintage Effects. They have a section called Hen's Teeth, which is like the rarest of all pedals. And they say they only made about 100. The Bag, the first commercially produced talk box, was Bag, or The Bag, by Custom. Looking like something like a psychedelic set of bagpipes, only 100 of these were ever made.
Should bring them back.
It costs...
Do you think they own a patent on that?
It cost It cost $99.50 in, like, 1970.
In money of the day, so about £300. Which is quite reasonable.
It looks amazing. I want it.
Yeah. absolutely. That looks like everything.
And then on the next page, just, I mean, this book is fantastic. There's an MXR pedal called the Whack Box.
Okay. The Whack Box?
The MXR Whack.
What do you do with it?
It was a talk box, basically.
Oh, I wanted it to be something that you hit.
Yeah.
That would be more appropriate for the name.
But yeah, if you can still find it, this book is just a guitar effects collector's dream book.
What is the book again?
Analog Man's Guide to Vintage Effects.
Matt, is the Maestro Rover in there, which is the spinning speaker that's like in a... It looks like a biscuit tin that you would mount onto a microphone stand and have it on the stage next to you. The Rover R01.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
There's quite a lot of Maestro stuff in here, but let's have a quick look.
Yeah, basically
scan.
It looks
absolutely incredible. Absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
Incredible.
It's so
it
different.
Looks like, do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the synthesizer thing in He-Man, the movie with Dolph Lundgren.
I don't remember that. I mean, I've seen that film several times.
What? You know, the synthesizer thing. You know, they have the... It's not really the same, but it's got that same sort of vibe to it. And you remember Paris, from Star Trek Voyager, was the Courtney Cox's boyfriend in it.
I remember Courtney Cox being in it. I remember Dolph Lundgren being in it. I remember it being very scary at the end when Skeletor's head pops up in the water. Do you remember that? Like, after the credits? Or, like, just before the credits or something? No, it says, like, the end, and then... Because I think that at the end they like throw him in a pit or something, and the last bit is him going like, so it's like a black screen, and then you see like the water floating, and I was like, oh, hang on, what's going on here? And bear in mind I'm like 6 or something watching this. It's like the water's bobbling around, then his head sort of pops out, and he's like, ah! And I remember after watching that, thinking about it, I didn't want to step on my bedroom floor as a kid because I was like, what if his head pops out? So I just like stayed on my bed the whole time.
This explains a lot.
Yeah.
Just bringing it back around to pedals. I haven't looked at this book for ages. And just flicking through, and there's under the rare section, there is the Interfax Harmonic Percolator. And we often talk about Jay's one, and I just thought this was very interesting. Interfax Electronics of Milwaukee, Wisconsin is known to have made only one effects pedal, the Harmonic Percolator. Designed by a guy named Ed Gies, the Interfax Harmonic Percolator was produced in extremely small numbers, possibly fewer than 200. Chuck Collins of Thermaniacs, who currently makes an exact replication of the original Harmonic Percolator, gave us a little insight, and he said very little is known about the origin and story behind the percolator. He then goes on to say, I went to the sale of the parts inventory of the old Interfax company about 10 years ago. This book also came out about 10 years ago. And there was no remains of any of the pedals. It's unknown how many were produced, but I believe the number is less than a couple of hundred.
Wow. So with Jay's one, it's always weird because, you know, we've gone down this route so many times. I think we... Is it that we don't know whether it's an original?
No, I think we were actually talking to the guy at Frederick Effects who said it is definitely not an original,
right,
because
okay.
they're so rare.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said that, and I think the exact replica is an exact replica, like even down to the box and stuff.
Yeah, I think they have maybe have a different font, because I'm looking at a couple of different ones here, and one of them looks like Jay's one, and then the other one has got like a different logo for where it says Interfax, and I think those are probably the original ones.
Right. Still one of the greatest pedals.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Neural DSP. And now Guitar Nerds listeners get 30% off all Neural DSP plugins with voucher code Guitar Nerds. Neural DSP create unique, industry-leading guitar and bass plugins designed to make you sound exactly how you want without any sacrificing tone or dynamics. Their range includes signature plugin rigs available from some of the best modern guitarists in the world, like Corey Wong, Tosin Abasi, Adam Nolly Getgood, and Pliny. Plugins like Corey Wong's Archetype give you everything from crystal clear cleans and edge of breakup blues brashness, whilst the 14 series brings out all the crushing modern metal distortion you could possibly need. The point is that there's an amp here for every type of player, and with a 14-day free trial of any of the plugins at neuraldsp.com, with no credit card required, you can try before you buy and then purchase with the confidence that you're buying the right rig for you. And don't forget, enter code GUITARNERDS at the checkout for 30% off all Neural DSP plugins. Follow links in the description of this podcast or visit neuraldsp.com for more info.
Episode of Guitar Nerds is brought to you by Shergold Guitars and their latest electric guitar, the Provocateur. Celebrated by Total Guitar Magazine as one of the most refined single cuts on the market, with endlessly satisfying playability and a flawless set of tones, the Shergold Provocateur combines remarkable specification with a retro vibe for a unique and bona fide rock guitar. From the brand that once powered the likes of Joy Division and is now championed by modern guitar pioneers and So I Watch You From Afar and many others, comes a fresh and exciting range of electric guitars. Designed by legendary British guitar luthier Patrick James Engel, and featuring a roasted mahogany neck and a solid mahogany body loaded with USA-made Seymour Duncan pickups, it's easy to see why Guitarist Magazine officially voted the Provocateur one of the best electrics of 2019. You can find your nearest Shergold dealer at shergoldguitars.com. And if you're not in the UK, don't fear. Many UK-based Shergold dealers have super awesome international shipping options to guarantee your Shergold will make it to you in the most far-flung of places. Proudly stand out from the crowd and discover yours today at shergoldguitars.com. Shergold Guitars. Be your own original.
Yeah, I'd be perfectly happy with the Frederick one, just because it's shaped like a wedge of cheese.
No. Yes, there you go. Why not?
Exactly. Anyway, speaking of, effects pedals and elaborate uses of effects pedals, Mark Packham.
Hello.
You used a tuner at a practice.
I did. We teased this right at the start of the show. And
yeah, I thought I'd better follow it up.
I don't know if you know, but when I'm playing outside of the house, I'm a bass player, and I've never really needed to take a tuner either to a gig or to a band practice before, because bass don't go out of tune. I took my bass out of the case recently. We just started having band practice again because of, it's been difficult recently, or, in the last year or so. I took my bass out of the case. I think I hadn't played it since November last year, took it out of the case and it was perfectly in tune. And that says a lot. But recently I have... So the P-Bass that I've got, right? I broke one of the machine heads on it in about, 2004, something like that. I broke it because I was taking it apart for some reason, and one of the screws came out and went somewhere, and I've never been able to find the replacement part. And I put a different screw in And it was never been quite right. And it's always like rattled a little bit when you play. And I thought like, okay, well, you know, I'm not using the bass regularly. Nothing's going on. What I'm going to do is I'm going to treat myself to buying a set of machine heads for it. I've never been able to, I've looked into this before and I've never been able to get the exact machine heads. You know, Fender, they've never had them in a catalogue. It seems like they only made these machine heads for a small period of time for the American Series P basses. And even then, it wasn't the same machine heads on the entire run of that bass. It's very particular around the kind of 2002, 2003, 2004, I think, had this one style of machine head. And I was like, I really want to get the same machine head. So, no, I haven't been able to get one. Couldn't never find one in a catalogue. I spoke to Fender when we worked at GAC. They were like, no, definitely can't get it. You know, they didn't make them for long enough. They don't make them anymore. You'll need to get a different type of Fender machine head, or you look at Schaller or whatever. Luckily, now we know someone who works with Fender spares quite closely.
Do we?
And I was able to say, is this possible? Can we get one? Or can I get a set? And it seems like he sourced me the last set ever. And yeah, I basically put those on the bass and I had my first band practice with them and I was like, I'm being really paranoid, but it sounds like I'm out of tune and I'm worried it's these new machine heads, you know, maybe they're like slipping or something. What I think it actually was I was just in, you know, so Joe, you can probably empathize with this. Sometimes your bass just sounds a bit out of tune. And I think it's because where you stand in the room, you might be in a weird little bass trap and you're getting like reflections and stuff and it sounds just a bit odd. And so I think I was just being paranoid, but I was like, okay, I'm going to take a tuner to band practice for the first time in the history of this band. We'll be going for 18 years. I'm going to take a tuner. And I've had a TU2 for ages. I bought one, yeah, probably when we first started doing gigs and stuff. Ended up basically never really using it for gigs. I don't like having pedals on stage because I kick them and like knock them around and stuff. I had a rack tuner for a while and I did use that on stage. But because it was all the rage for everyone to have like wireless sets and rack
that
tuners.
Has never been the
it was
there has
totally
never been this time
in the British punk rock ska punk scene of 2005 I want to say 2006 yeah. It was very fashionable to have a rack gear. You'd have a rack mounted head, you'd have a rack tuner, and you'd have a wireless system. So I had all of those things and realized that was stupid. We were talking about this the other day. I was playing at a venue in Swindon, which I don't think is there anymore, called Area 51, which is an alien-themed... I think it was like an old shed, essentially, like a big... I don't know how to describe the building, but it was like massive and it had been converted into like a bar. But it kind of had a bit of a youth centre-y vibe to it as well. And I just remember I had this... Yeah, I had the Mark bass head in a rack. I had this tuner and I had this wireless system. And I was like, wireless system. Yeah, wicked. I'm going to get off the stage and like wander around the venue, like get in the crowd and that. And then I was just like, this just isn't working. And I think that was the last time I ever used a wireless system because I was like, I'm lifting this entire rack case for basically a tuner that I don't use, a wireless system that doesn't work, and effectively a head that is almost small enough to go in the gig bag with the bass. But what I'm actually lugging around is an aluminium flight case for these three things that most of it is totally pointless. Anyway, so got rid of the rack tuner. Never used the floor tuner on stage because I don't like pedals on stage. But I had this TU2 that I would use for just at home. You know, when I had a pedal board for a bit, it was on there. So anyway... I was like, I've got a TU2, I'll just take it to band practice. And it turns out you don't need a tuner at all because I was basically never out of tune. But I do think, just for peace of mind, I'm going to take a tuner to band practices.
TU2, yeah.
I mean, of course, I'm not using anything else. I'm not just saying that because you're here, Matty. TU2 is just the best tuner.
Yeah.
Or TU3, they're basically the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
All I'm saying is there's a new Random Heroes album on the way, and we're getting serious about practicing. So,
and it's in tune, so don't worry about that.
The bass is going to be in tune.
Wow, how about that?
I've always used a tuner on recording. That's actually, you know, people will actually hear that and care about it, rather than, you know, gigs where people don't listen to the bass. They're just, you know, doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I guess that, yeah. Yes, okay, wonderful. Do you know I actually use the tuner?
Guitar nerds.
Guitar nerds. I've sold my entire pedal board and I'm just using a tuner.
Man uses tuner.
Most of the time, not even using the tuner.
Oh, it's just awful. Yeah, I actually use the tuner on the Boss MS3 these days. It's perfectly, you know, perfectly good. You know, it's fine even when I'm sort of down in drop C. It doesn't really struggle at all. I have no idea what the you know, what the algorithm is for the tuner on the MS3, but it's allowed me to free up a little bit of extra space on the pedal board.
I was talking to a friend the other day who did before obviously the situation of 2020. He was on an 18-month world tour, which kickstarted with the basically the French equivalent of Jules Holland, right? And they had to do two songs. They opened the show, played the song, absolutely fine, walked off. Somehow, in between that one and the second song, so it's basically like all live, they had to move where the band was playing for a different backdrop. Somehow, they had picked up the pedal board. As they'd obviously picked it up, they'd put the thumb on the tuner pedal, which they'd somehow managed to knock the tuner up by like 2 cents.
Oh, no.
So instead of tuning to 440, it was tuning to 442.
Great formation.
And, of course, he was like, it's in tune. And it's like, the tuner says it's in tune. It's all good. Didn't realise. Played it. Everything sounded fine. Like, you know, just a bit off, but not like so far off it's like it's out of tune. Listen to it back and it's like, it's something not right about it. It's like, check the tuner, and the whole thing was tuned 2 cents up from 440.
That happened to me once. Well, the old guitar player in my band had one of the Korg, what they call DT100s.
Yes.
And they were really, really easy to do that on. And we were like, I think we did a gig with it, but it was like set to 441, I think. And it was just like, things just don't sound quite right. I don't know what's going on. And exactly the same thing had happened, because they're on that little, you know, those little like plastic buttons, like just like little black plastic sprung buttons. That's what was doing it. And it was so easy to just knock one of those and you'd be, what do they call it? Configured differently.
Yeah, ridiculous. So yeah, always check your tuner.
Always check. 440 all the way. Anyway.
432, mate.
Yeah.
Apollo 440, great band. Lost in Space.
Okay. Well, there's that one. Anyway.
Surely you guys remember Apollo 440.
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, are they a band?
Yeah, they were. Right. They did.
Because when you said Apollo 440 Lost in Space, I thought Apollo 440 was the name of the spaceship in Lost in Space.
No, they did Apollo 440 did the theme tune to Lost in Space, I believe. Yeah, Lost in Space, 1998, the theme tune to the great movie starring Joey Tribbiani, otherwise known as Matt LeBlanc, about being lost in space.
Yeah, yeah.
They also did Stop the Rock. Do you not remember that song?
No, I don't know what that is.
Basically, it's sort of like a drum and bass rock crossover. Fantastic. And in fact, coming from direct from the Wikipedia, the song was inspired by Status Quo's Caroline, which is another great tune, but it's sort of a drum and bass version of that. Brilliant.
There you go.
Well, that's a wonderful left field turn for
that. I'm going to listen to that basically as soon as we finish podcasting. Apollo 440. I'm just thinking about it. It came out August 1999. I'm in the last year of school, loving life, and listening to a bit of drum and bass crossed with Status Quo.
Bomb Funk MCs, you know, got that on you.
That's a bit late for me, I think. When was the Bomb Funk MCs? Let's have a look.
I've never heard of any of this.
Bomb Funk MCs?
You've definitely heard the old Bomb Funk
MCs. I have not
MCs.
Heard of that. I don't know what that is.
The microphone.
I was probably listening to Yes at the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's weird. They were Finnish, the old Bomb Funk MCs. And their big single was that one, Freestyler. That was 1999.
Classic. Yes.
Big tune. Not as good as Apollo 440.
Oh, well.
And don't get me started on Bentley Rhythm Ace. Great band.
And on that note, we're going to dive headfirst into a big old barrel of news. News. So, first of all, Mark Packham, tell us all about this new electro harmonics pedal, which we saw. There was a little dribbling of it at NAMM at the start of the year, and it's it's now in full flow.
The classic electro harmonics tease release of, oh, we forgot to take it out of our printed catalogue at NAMM.
Classic. To be honest, I've not really read up on what it does because this was only announced 3 minutes before we started podcasting. So I saw that it was in there. I popped it in the old news list, but I've not had a chance to read it. We are, of course, talking about the Electro-Harmonix Pitchfork Plus, which seems to be basically an expansion on the regular Pitchfork platform. Matt, feel free to jump in at any point and tell me what it actually does.
I thought I'd let you fumble through for a little bit.
Well, it's just like it's a pitch shifter, but it's got two buttons on it rather than one button.
It's basically two. So Pitchfork is a polyphonic pitch shifter, so it doesn't just do octave up or down, it does all the harmonies in between, but it's not tied to a key like a harmonist pedal, for example. So you think whammy, basically. So Pitchfork had you could go all the way to two octaves up or two octaves down, and all the intervals in between. You could have a single pitch or a dual pitch. So it could be like one guitar, two guitars, or three guitars playing one.
Very good. Very versatile.
Tracked very well. And the foot switch did a momentary or latching mode. Mm. And then obviously a load of people have gone like, we need more. And obviously the big thing with most pitch shifting pedals is the ability to save presets, because lots of people want to do a fifth on one thing or an octave on another. So the Pitchfork Plus is all of that in one box. So you've got two different pitch shifters over a three octave range. You've got dedicated main and dry outputs. But what you can do now is you can save up to 99 presets, which is very cool. Not over MIDI, though. You have to use the...
I don't think we should even talk about it any longer.
No. You can use a foot switch that's programmable that can be assigned to a variety of functions. You can also, there's an external in for connecting an external foot controller like EHX's triple foot controller, which I'm sure I haven't seen.
They announced that a little while ago.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be for like the Grand Canyon and stuff. Yeah. But eight different modes, including XMOD, which features cross modulation that creates FM and rig modulator effects, latch or momentary mode, a bunch of enhanced features.
This sounds like a cracking.
I think for a pitch shifter, if you don't want to go down the whammy route, or you want something maybe that you need to be a bit smaller, I think the momentary mode on the foot switch was always a winner for me.
Yeah.
Because although you couldn't really set the rise time, most people just wanted to do the classic instantly down to up an octave. Whee! Just like that.
Exactly.
You know, no one wants to go because you've got a whammy bar.
What are you talking about? Everyone wants that,
you know, or the reverse. I think you know, most people are using it for that kind of classic sort of instant pitch up. And I think this, it seems like a winner. No UK or Euro price, but $213.80 according to MAP pricing. Sorry, I just opened their website because I couldn't see it on there. And their tagline is New Fork City.
Yeah, very good. Love it. Love it.
That is brilliant. So Pitchfork Plus features two independent pitch shifting engines with full control over each. Both will transpose your pitch up or down over a span of three octaves. Rock solid tracking, organic musical tone, and extensive control for the ultimate harmonizer.
They are very good. The tracking is great. They are the right price as a product. Certainly, if you're looking for an octaver that does a little bit more than octaving, then this might well be the solution. I just think, you know, they're not reinventing the wheel here. They've just perfected something they did earlier. The addition of you know, savable presets is definitely something you need on such a specific pedal. Like, you don't want to do everything in, you know, with one interval, you know, because that interval is going to have a very specific sound that works in a specific key or with a specific song. Of course, people are going to want to move around and, you know, relieving the sort of needs to get down, you know, on your knees to change the setting in between each track, I think, is a really good idea.
Yeah,
shame it can't be MIDI controlled for me.
Yeah, I think that's
wouldn't it be cool if it could work with something like an ES8 and, you know.
Yeah, that's I think that's a little bit of an oversight. I mean, the problem is, I guess you could maybe use the control out for the in. It does look like you could put like a dual foot switch in and then scroll up and down through presets, but not quite the same. But I've got no doubt that'll be a wicked pedal. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Mark Packham.
Hello.
I hear that someone's moved in next door to you.
I don't know what you mean.
Because we're going to talk about new neighbour.
Okay, fine. This isn't what I thought you were going to go to next, so I have not had the chance
to. Okay. We could talk about the thing you wanted. I was just, do you know what? I'm kind of aware that we're towards the end of the podcast and the new neighbour stuff is very exciting.
Yeah, I think maybe we need to give that a bit more time. So maybe like we'll cover that next week. Like Matt can give those a good going over in terms of, you know, reading the spec properly and stuff rather than have me fumble through it. What I want to talk about, obviously, is much, much more simple. Brand new pedal from Skreddy Pedals. Now, I don't know if you guys have had any experience with them at all. Have you used any of their stuff?
I have not.
Okay. I have.
Oh, you have.
I had a pedal called the Mayo at one point, which was based on the 70s op-amp pedal used by Billy Corgan. Yeah, great pedals, really well built. A little bit of a hidden gem in the boutique world.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know, make some great pedals. Don't talk about them enough. They made a really good delay pedal, which is now discontinued, but definitely worth hunting down.
Yeah,
I don't know anything about the company.
So, hang on, let's just go to their about page. I'm on their website right now.
They're from Carson City, which is in Nuv.
Yeah, they are from Nuv, definitely. Yes, they're from Carson City. To be honest, I mean, their website doesn't have a huge amount of information about them. Mark Alfs is the CEO and designer.
What's Nuv? Is that New Virginia?
No, it's not New Virginia. I believe it's Nevada, although I may be wrong about that. What they have just released is the Super 100, which is the third in a recent line of kind of amp in a box pedals they've done. So first one was the Rubber Soul, which they describe as a cleanish preamp with the soul of a vintage British tube combo. So I'm guessing it's kind of Voxy AC30E. They've done the Twangophile, which is they describe as a cleanish preamp with the soul of a vintage American tube combo. So it's going to be,
ooh,
I guess, Fender-y. And the most recent one, the Super 100, which they describe as a classic British 100-watt amp emulator. So this is going, I assume, after a, and you can tell by the look of the pedal that it's kind of, I guess, going to be Marshall-y.
It's Marshall knobs.
Marshall knobs. It looks like the gold colour is kind of Marshall front panel-y. The idea being that it sounds like a cranked British 100-watt amp through a massive stack of speakers, but all in one pedal. Now, we've seen a few different takes on this. Obviously, you know, there's many pedals that kind of try and emulate a cranked Marshall. One thing that I did think was cool on this is that they've got a sag knob on there.
That is cool.
Yeah, which is, so the idea is that there's an optical compressor built in, which gives you some options for kind of like recreating amp sag. And yeah, I think it will just give you a different range depending on how you want the pedal to respond.
I do love a sag. I'm into a sag because there's you get sag on all the amps on the Helix.
Yeah.
So I like maxing out that sagginess as much as possible.
Totally. So I've not heard a demo of this one yet, but you know the reviews of all the Skreddy stuff are always really positive. So I assume this is going to be really cool. Price wise, $239, but at the moment there is a 10% discount available. Apparently, if you are willing to put half down now and wait a month for the builder to make your pedal. So that seems super cool. I'm always up for Marshall emulation pedals. As we've talked about in the past, you know, there's been some great sort of 800 emulators that I'm super into. And this looks similar. I need to hear a demo of it sort of get my head around where it sits in my kind of ranking of Marshall emulators, but it certainly looks very nice indeed.
It does. It looks absolutely fantastic. Now we're coming up towards the end of this podcast. We've got some questions from the group, and there's some other bits of news which I think we'll hold off for next week for further discussion. And in the podcast, we're going to be taking questions from the
podcast. What have we just done?
In the Patreon? No, this never happened. Oh, you're imagining okay. this. In the Patreon episode of the podcast, we're going to be taking questions from the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. So yes, we're going to go and do that. Before we finish up, I need to introduce, I forgot to do it at the start. I'm dropping the ball at the moment. Everyone, I keep forgetting to introduce new patrons at the start. So, welcome to James J. Enzer, and also welcome once again to Andy Manley, who had, accidentally become a $5 patron tier twice. So he hasn't been having his name sung out all this time, right? Because he just had 2 5 tiers rather than 1 10, and he has now changed.
You guys are so close. In my absence, you've got so close to hitting the mod mode threshold, but you're just not quite there yet. I'm just looking at it right now.
We need you back. That's holding us off.
14.27, and what did we say? It was like 1500 is where to get it. So basically, you need, what is that, like seven and a bit people something to sign like up at the top tier level, and then mod mode becomes a reality. It's I thought you would have done it by now, if I'm honest. Well, you know, I've been off for a few weeks, but I thought you would have done it.
We needed you, Mark, to just like tip people over the edge.
You needed a professional salesman to come in and tell people that they should sign up for the Patreon, because not only every week do you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content, but you also get all the mini series, and you will eventually get mod mode when they break the threshold.
Eventually. It will be there when we burst through that threshold. Now, of course, dear listener, you can get involved in our Patreon at 3 separate tiers, the $1, $5, and $10 tier. $1 will get you the podcast ad-free and early every week. At the $5 tier, you get access to our entire back catalogue of mini-series. And at the $10 tier, you get all of those things, plus your name sung at the end of the podcast. You can follow us on all the social media platforms at Guitar Nerds, and join us on Facebook, as I said, at facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, here we go, and welcome to another Patreon song about everyone who pays their Patreon subscription from the $10 tier. Christian Abbott and Ty Allen, Yogi the guitarist, Modius, Carl Harris, Cloudlifter, Todd Simons, and Ridge Creswell, Joe Hoppard, Sean Hughes, Michael Howard, Brian Hansen, Shane Hammond, Jeffrey Wax, and Eric Hammer, Samuel Frost, and Brian Einsler, Gavin van der Linden, and Jacob McGee, Andy Manley, Scott Hutting, and Robert Butterworth, because they are the Guitar Nerds. That's right, let's sing it.
The Guitar Nerds.
Here we go once more.
The Guitar Nerds.
That's what they are, what they really are. Ah, yes.
The Guitar Nerds.
Let's hear it again.
The Guitar Nerds.
Bang, bang, Barracuda.
The Guitar Nerds.
Oh, yes, that's what they are. Oh, Simon Milbourne, Mark Hizal, Cadowacki, Stuart Robson, Neil and Michael McVeigh, Eric File, Andrew Good, Joe Puddock, and Merrin Peters, Richard Sudworth, and Jack Cutmore, Jamie Kemp, Ken Sayers, and Adrian Day, and Sean Arbo, John Anglin, Rob Gruhl, and Tucker Ramadan, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nick Nagel, and Stephen Burke, Aaron Sherman, David Lee, of course, Matt Bellamy, Jake Gray, Scott Kennedy, Blake Weiland, Christopher Lowe, Sith and Hans Ams, and Derek Rich, Rob Norvick, Steve Merkel, JD Short, Robin Smith, Brad Page, Andy McKenzie, Scott O'Brien, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, and Luke Gravitt. They're all
the Guitar Nerds.
That's right, they are
the Guitar Nerds.
Everybody's singing
the Guitar Nerds.
guitar nerds. Dear guitar nerds. And listen to the song of the nerds that I sing. I'm singing a song about you. I'm singing a song about the guitar nerds. I'm getting down on my knees and I'm singing a song about the guitar nerds. Singing a song. Singing a song of the nerds. That's what I do with my day and my night.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.